This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 275 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
Doing good, David. How are you?
I'm good. I've been furiously packing. You know, by this time next week, I will be lying on a beach in Hawaii, looking at sea turtles and whales and looking forward to having a little time away from winter here on the East Coast. But we've got a great show tonight. It's not just us. We have a guest, don't we?
Yes, we do. Joining us is Kevin Gallagher. He's the president and CEO of Simulize, a provider of operational intelligence and technology applications for both federal and commercial organizations. Now, Kevin has more than 30 years of experience in system engineering and operational support. He co-founded Simulize to specialize in operational intelligence, situational awareness, and traffic management technology for the Department of Defense and intelligence operations. But now, Simulize has entered the commercial drone space. Their platform enables commercial UAS operators to process and analyze large streams of data from disparate sources in real time and achieve a common operating picture in real time in a customized graphical interface. So, Kevin, welcome to the UAV Digest.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
Now, to start off, let's consider, broadly speaking, where is the industry today with UAS traffic management systems?
Sure. So there's been a lot of work and research done over the last handful of years. NASA has led the charge in doing traffic management research. They've had a sequence of they're onto their fourth technical capability level flight test. You know, they have about a year for each one to kind of focus on building and evolving the traffic management capabilities and techniques. And now the FAA is starting to they've been a participant with NASA, and now they're starting to take a more lead role in that with the UTM pilot program that just kicked off with three of the FAA test sites, North Dakota, who we support, and Nevada and Virginia. And so that work is continuing, and we're still some research, although I think a lot of the capabilities and the fundamentals behind it have been worked over, and I think the capability is fairly mature. Still have to look at some scale issues, but I think it's progressed very nicely.
Now, we seem to run across a number of organizations that are looking at or developing UTM. Are these groups, are they coordinated? Are they independent efforts? Does it really matter? What's happening here?
Sure. So there is a fair amount of coordination. There's a number of groups. There's a lot of international, some different international pockets, but there's NASA is leading a charge, and probably the broadest, more focused effort. And so all the participants have to adhere to the same specifications and interfaces and capabilities, so that everyone working in that is on the same page, if you will, doing the same work, and we're all talking with each other. Right now we're in the technical capability level 4, they're calling it Spiral Development Program. And so all the participants with that, we're all doing shakedown, simulations and tests, and all of us have to communicate and talk together. So you have to be on the same, you can have some different capabilities and different ways to offer things to your operators that you're supporting. But from a from an infrastructure perspective, we all have to talk together, have the same expectations, the same interfaces, and so we can all do this kind of distributed management. And so, you know, there's a lot of people have some different thoughts about it and different twists and, you know, turns on it. But fundamentally, we've got to eventually all be on the same page to manage the same airspace. And I think, you know, there's a few camps out there, but I think by and large, it's converging really well.
Sure. When we talk about UTM, UAS traffic management, I've heard someone suggest that the U really maybe shouldn't be UAS, but maybe universal, because traffic management should just be traffic management. And we don't necessarily want to look at it as a traffic management system for manned aviation and another one for unmanned aviation. What are your thoughts on that?
Actually, that's a key point. We've been chatting about that quite a bit and trying to bring that a little bit to the forefront, because, you know, a lot of the focus right now and the work is on UAS, but one of the big challenges in the safe operations is how do you work nicely between general aviation and UAS? And they're the ones who share, have more common airspace and share more of the operating environment. We certainly have to, you know, deal well with the commercial airlines and the overall, you know, air traffic control system. But general aviation and UAS is out in non-controlled, uncontrolled airspace is a big challenge. And if we all could participate in a traffic management system, doing planning and awareness from all airspace all operators in the airspace, that would, I believe that's the key. You know, we're going to have sense and avoid technologies, a lot of things, and there might be vehicle-to-vehicle communications and a lot of that close-in avoidance and coordination. But the best way to have a safe airspace is to plan well and to let everybody know where you're operating, and to be able to, planning is the best approach. You certainly need to deal with the challenges and the dynamics of in-flight operations, and UTM helps with that also. And you also need that kind of that last mile, that last piece that ensures, you know, safety. But UTM across the airspace is important, and you know, especially like I said, there where UAS are sharing airspace with general aviation in a very significant way, and general aviation doesn't have all the technology and pieces that the UAS are developing. And so how do you work nicely together when not everybody is going to be at the same technology level? And planning is key for that.
David, we've certainly heard from our GA friends about their concerns with drones, haven't we?
Oh, absolutely. If everybody knows that it was our GA friends that caused us to start the show. But we talked about it so much, people were complaining that Max and I were talking way too much about drones and not enough about general aviation and how drones were going to fly through their windscreens.
They're more common in the airspace together. They'll be flying in more proximity, and a lot of it's left to make sure everybody is aware and behaves well and can operate together.
So let's level set a little bit and tell me what the definition of operational intelligence is.
Sure. So operational intelligence is, talk about big data and business intelligence, and it kind of combines, it's a real-time piece of, you might think of more traditional business intelligence, but it's trying to take data, process all this real-time data, put it together, and to help decision makers help you make good decisions and be able to dynamically manage traffic. And so operational intelligence is that technology to bring all that data, all the different pieces, and to be able to operate well and provide that complete picture, if you will, of your airspace. And it's not just where each of your aircraft are, that's key, but it's also bringing in lots of other data. You know, you got weather data, you know, you got all the different airspace definitions, and, you know, you got restricted airspace, and you got TFRs. And so bringing all that information together is what operational intelligence does.
Hmm. And I know we've talked about this before, but is the approach being taken for there to be one overall mother of all traffic management systems that coordinates everything, or is it more of a distributed approach? How's that being handled across the entire United States, let's say?
Yeah, so that's been an evolutionary process. I believe most folks were under the idea that it would be one, you know, or maybe regional, but kind of a big kind of monolithic traffic management system, you know, similar to air traffic control. But it's really evolved now where it's going to be very distributed, you know, potentially lots of different UTM services that are out there that will coordinate and manage airspace cooperatively. So, you know, some folks say that's going to be, you know, thousands of them, and could be, although traffic management is not a trivial task. So I'm not sure how many we're going to have, but it'll be a large number, and we'll be working in a collaborative environment. You know, some of the challenges in that is kind of the policy, if you will, or the auditing. If I'm an operator and I just want to fly whenever I want to fly, I might go put a reservation out there, you know, take a big area for a very long period of time every day, and I might only fly occasionally. So there needs to be some way to manage that and to be able to make sure everybody works well together, doesn't over-reserve, utilizes their airspace. There's also challenges where some of the UTM operators are part of organizations that have a business to fly drones. Maybe it's package delivery or inspecting a wind turbine or power line. But if they're doing traffic management, you know, we have to make sure that all the equities are taken care of, and these companies that are doing it, you know, they have they've got a business goal. So we have to keep some amount of independence, I believe, and some way to monitor, and I'm not sure regulate is probably too strong, but we need to be able to monitor and provide encouragement and direction for folks to work well together. And definitely you get the airspace that you need, but don't try to, you know, kind of manipulate the system and over constrain the airspace.
Kevin, a follow on to that would be standardization coming across. If we're going to have multiple UTM systems, we're going to need some sort of standardization. Do you see that standardization coming from the ground up, meaning the UTM operators up, or do you think it's going to be a top-down thing where, like, the FAA will set the standards? How is it working currently with all of these discussions? I know the FAA kind of wanted a ground-up approach, but are they still leaning towards a top-down?
That's a very interesting set of challenges there. I believe they want it to be industry-led, developed, and implemented. And without much participation or direction, they want industry to kind of go do it themselves and put together this system. I'm probably more in the camp that we need a framework defined. We need some, you know, rules of the road. We don't necessarily need, you know, don't need an air traffic control system the FAA has. They can't, you know, it's not viable for UAS, and it doesn't make sense. And we don't necessarily need it all, but we do need, I think we do need some framework, some guidelines. What are some, you know, there needs to be, unfortunately, there needs to be some, I'll say penalty, you know, some, you know, if you're not behaving well, there has to be some authority that somebody could change your behavior. You know, I'm way over reserving and never using my airspace, and I'm always locking it up. So, you know, I from my business objective, and that's, you know, what I should try to do if I have my company perspective on. But there has to be, you know, equity across all the interests and all the objectives. And so I think we need some role, some participation. We need some guidance, and there needs to be some independent look at all of this. We provide a USS, and that's what our focus is. We don't have a platform. We're not biased in some of those areas, although as we get, you know, folks who want to use our platform, then, you know, we would be working in their best interest. But there needs to be some independence, some framework, some auditing, if you will. Some folks have talked about, you know, the UTM operator, UTM systems should get together quarterly and talks amongst themselves and self-police. But I don't really see that, you know, if I'm making mistakes and people are highlighting that to me, I say, oh, great, I can go fix that. But, you know, I'm not going to, having us all talk about it, it's not necessarily going to fix folks who are not playing fairly and nicely in the overall distributed system. So I think there needs to be something, but it's certainly a policy challenge.
Well, tell us a little bit about how Simulize has been involved with NASA's UTM platform.
We've been working with NASA. We've actually participated with all of their, they kind of build the infrastructure and the framework. They've built that. We've participated with every one of their builds. We're actually the only company that's actually participated in every one of the exercises that they've had UTM and in their simulations. And largely we're supporting, we've been supporting the Northern Plains UAS test site, as well as the Alaska Center for UAS Integration, you know, the North Dakota and the Alaska test sites. So we've been in all of the UTM TCL exercises and national campaigns. We've been working with them generally. So we've had a lot of flight experience with that. And we've been working in the NASA working groups. So we've been involved in kind of every step of the way. And it's certainly been an interesting and exciting, you know, effort. Each of the flight tests have, you know, we've been able to put in some pretty cool technology and walk away with some very good lessons learned, and nothing like a good flight test to really get it fully get all the parameters in there. You know, simulations are critical and important, but when you're out there with actual flights and different operators flying, that that's the real proof of the pudding.
So tell us a little bit more about your contribution to these efforts. Is that the Mission Insight application?
It is. So Mission Insight's our we have our flight control application, which is more focused in the federal government spaces, and we've developed that since 2000. We kind of took that technology and have twisted it a bit to look more commercially into UAS, and that's our Mission Insight application. We have a server side, you know, a cloud side that does the traffic management, you know, analysis and brings all the data together and does all the, you know, the processing. We also have a client application that will, integrates with the operator and with their ground control station or different ways they can operate with it. So we'll send them messaging. We've been doing a bunch of work trying to automate that and make the workload of the operator, you know, reduce that workload, having them have to look at another terminal, another screen while they've got their ground station. They're also trying to watch their vehicle. So we've done some things with audio, you know, text, you know, kind of a language, trying to try to provide a mechanism where pilots are used to, you know, doing terse radio communications to work through their issues and topics that they, you know, have to coordinate. So we were trying to have that automated audio, that automated language that will give them information about, you know, where there might be a conflict, where there's a vehicle getting close, not just a blip on the screen, but it's at this range, this angle, this azimuth. So, you know, working on both the operator side, but also the heavy lifting processing in the back end, and being able to work with all the other USSs out there. And then we also provide supplemental data service providers, they call it, but it's other data. So we process data from NOAA, you know, weather forecast data for the day, trying to look at, you know, weather parameters that are important to UAS operations, bring those in to the operator, as well as into the planning and, you know, that traffic management system. So we kind of have those three elements together.
You mentioned the integration pilot program projects. I think you said three of them that you'll be involved in.
So it was the UTM pilot program. There's the integrated pilot program and the UTM pilot program, which are two distinct efforts out of the FAA. I mentioned the UTM pilot program, which is working with the three of the FAA test sites, got awarded that effort. The integrated pilot program, there was, I think, 10 government affiliates, and we're supporting Alaska and North Dakota on that program.
Okay. Yeah, they get confused by that sometimes. And,
but we just get confused because they keep saying the word pilot program for unmanned aircraft. We lose it at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so close. It's hard to keep it, hard to distinguish it. It's hard to keep it all straight.
You know, there's a number of different use cases for drones, of course, that all would depend heavily on having a UTM in place. As you and the others are working through these issues, is there a particular use case that represents the greatest challenge, or the one that you use to try to model the development activity, or is it just sort of an amorphous traffic management problem?
So it's probably not a direct use case, but kind of the focus is to be able to support beyond visual line of sight operations. So not, it could be power lines, it could be a bunch of different things, but the real goal is how we can allow UAS to fly beyond visual line of sight. And that's really the big end goal. That's what enables broad commercial operations. A lot of good uses now that companies are really leveraging drone technologies, but until they can fly beyond visual line of sight, and fly fleets of vehicles, that's when the commercial world will really get the most advantage out of drones. And that's the biggest challenge for safe operations and traffic management and all the vehicle technologies that need to come together to allow that to happen.
We see a lot of eVTOL proposals and concepts. Lately, it seems almost every company, large and small, is thinking about or proposing or developing something. Does that particular kind of application concern you at all in terms of what's being developed, or would that just fall right in line with everything else?
That kind of falls in line, I think. There's still some really good technology that needs to be developed, but that's moving along, I think, at a fairly good, rapid pace, and a lot of capabilities coming together. So that seems to be moving along well.
Okay.
Work to be done.
Yes, yes. Well, you personally have an interesting background. You worked with General Electric Space Division and Aegis Research Corporation. Did those experiences contribute something important to the formation of Simulize?
It did, actually. It was my focus was a lot of looking. I always had to deal with bringing in lots of data, trying to put it together and make sense of it, and help do planning, and whether it's satellites or aircraft or other things. And so that's when we started Simulize. We saw a gap in trying to be able to bring this data together to support operational kind of decision making and management. And so that's why we built Flight Control back in 2000, and built that technology where we're dealing with worldwide data, high capacity, high throughput data, and not just putting dots on a map, if you will, but trying to bring it together and provide analytics and information to decision makers and operators. And so we started looking at commercial side of that. It's really the operational intelligence is applicable in so many industries, but we actually saw a good need in the drone space. There was a lot of companies building drone, vehicle, platform technologies, and a lot of companies working on building sensors that you put on the drones. And then we had a lot of companies working on processing that sensor data for products that the drone would help with, such as precision agriculture, things like that. But the gap we saw was all the data and the processing you need to put together to actually fly the drone, to manage and operate the drone so you can operate it safely and efficiently. And we saw that same gap, and that's kind of where our focus has always been. and bringing that data together and processing large amounts of data in real time.
There are certainly a lot of people that would like to get into the drone industry in some fashion or other. There's a lot of folks who look at it from a standpoint of piloting drones for different applications. But there are many different opportunities, I think, to participate in the growth of this exciting industry. So I thought I'd ask if you see any particular skills or talents that are needed by people who want to be part of UTM development or of the drone industry in general?
It's a big world out there. There's lots of work that still needs to be done. We're still moving forward, but regulations are slow in coming, and there's a lot of work to be done, and things like UAS identification, UAS ID is a big topic right now. How do we identify vehicles? So there's technologies there. There's vehicle technologies. There's sensor technologies, and our business is looking at how to help drones fly. But the reason you have a drone is it does. There's a job it'll help you do in a better way. So there's a big world out there in terms of what drones can do. And, we're certainly working in lots of different industries, but I think there's a lot of opportunity in that. And as far as to figure out how to use this great technology to help, a problem, help a business case or help, search and rescue or first responders. But from a UTM perspective, it's really how to work in a distributed environment, how to process, kind of some of the big data and do that in real time. And then to be able to coordinate and, we're doing automated negotiations between management systems. So that kind of data processing and data movement is kind of the key for us.
It's certainly exciting times, I think.
Oh, it is. It is. We're all, regulatory part is kind of
pacing item.
Stumbling point.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's really hard. We talked about the Part 107. It was a great first step, but it came out for review, and about a year and a half later it became regulation, and there's just so much work and so many documents that have to be produced that all have to define and specify so much information. So it's just a lot of work. So for Beyond Visual Line of Sight, it seems like we're in this kind of perennial 3 to 5 years out that we've been, for the last 3 to 5 years. We've got the IPP and the UPP, and they've got a couple of year horizon. There's UAS ID. I think that might be a 5 year horizon, for testing and technology. So that those things are really the drivers of, I think, the timeline. I think technology is moving well. There's still more to be done, but that's probably moving faster than the regulatory environment. And once we can get beyond visual line of sight, I think from a business case, that becomes much more viable for operators and some of the technology partners.
Hmm. Yeah, things ought to fall into place pretty quickly after that, I hope.
yeah, they should. It's just there's just a lot to still a lot to be done to get that out. The FAA has come out with some recent rulemaking, and they've also came out with an announcement for potential rulemaking with kind of a lot of questions and good progress, but they're still trying to answer a lot of questions so that then they can go build the regulatory framework. And safety is critical. Safety is key. You can't minimize that. It's kind of a risk management approach, but it's a lot of work and challenges. So it takes some time.
So Kevin, let's talk a little bit of news. And did your team play in the Super Bowl this year?
We did not. The referees, we didn't play. We weren't engaged with the Super Bowl effort at this point.
Oh, well, but we do have a timely news story about the role of drones in the Super Bowl this year. And I was sort of surprised that the only thing I really took away from it, because my beloved Eagles weren't in it this year.
Yes, indeed.
The fact that their drones were in halftime and there wasn't really a major announcement or production of it. I thought they were just Chinese lanterns, and then the Chinese lanterns were forming the word love. I went, oh, drones, what a concept. But there was more to it than that, huh, Max?
Yeah. I had the same reaction, too. At first, I didn't realize that we were looking at drones, and then all of a sudden, it became obvious. So, yeah, it is kind of interesting that this time, anyway, it wasn't mentioned specifically. But they did have some interesting groups on hand to kind of watch over the airspace. There were a team of pilots from Skyfire Consulting that were on a nearby rooftop, and they had a tethered DJI Matrice 210 quadcopter tethered so that it wouldn't end up over the stadium, but providing video feeds and sharing those feeds with different agencies that were concerned with maintaining the safety of the event. They used a platform built by DroneSense, in this case, to enhance situational awareness. The tether came from Drone Aviation Corp. Interestingly, before the game, I think before the day of the game, they had actually had this system up and running, and they say that at least six drones came into the exclusion zone and were intercepted and confiscated. So I guess that's a success indicator right there.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You highlighted the kind of what I would characterize. We saw three significant things kind of happening with drones at the Super Bowl. And you hit the first one, where it is amazing how, the coordinated flight of all those drones in the show. And it was beautiful and works great. And it's a really big display of technology and capability. And then you have the use of drones to help protect and make sure, everybody's safe and secure. And that's very significant. And then you have this
your
capability.
Your grounded files.
Yeah. You've got, people, and they weren't, generally the case was they weren't really doing anything, trying to do something harmful, but it was unsafe. And you have other folks who, would use them for harm. So, it's an amazing technology, and it came out in three different ways at the, some beautiful, some functional, and some potentially harmful.
The article that we'll put in the show notes is from AOPA, and in that article, they also mentioned that it was reported that there were three drones from or operated by Fortem Technologies that were six rotor systems, and we've seen this before in some videos, the type if fitted with nets that are able to capture rogue drones in flight. The article mentions that there were no immediate reports that any of those drones that had been confiscated were taken down with this net system. But that's another interesting aspect of this, another anti-drone system being put into operation.
Just like my Lego set.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
That there is a whole other technology out there, and a lot of good participants like Dedrone and folks and Fortem and a number that are trying to, if you do have a drone that is being unsafe, that's a whole other technology set to try to figure out what to do about that and how to protect against that.
Right. All right. Well, Kevin, we want to thank you so much for coming on the show. Tell our listeners where they can learn more about Simulize.
Sure. Actually, just www.simulize.com. That's our website, and you can reach out to us, and we would love to chat and help you with whatever we can help you with in technology-wise.
Great. And that's Simulyze.com.
Yes. Thank you.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for listening to episode 275 of the UAV Digest. As always, you can find us at our website, theuavdigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, well, that's at theuavdigest.com/275.
And of course, we want you to be part of our fun Slack listener team. You can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And Max and I will send you an invite. You can join the conversation there. You can also find us on Twitter @UAV Digest, on Facebook @facebook.com/theuavdigest. We, of course, want feedback from you. That would be feedback@theuavdigest.com. And if you listen on a various podcasters like Stitcher.com or Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, please leave some feedback there so other people can find us. And of course, you can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. But again, we'd like to thank Kevin for being on the show. Really interesting conversation. And hopefully we'll have you back as you're further down the line with all of this operational UTM management.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you having us, and we'd love to come back.
So with that, I'm going to say I'm off to Hawaii.
Oh, I hate you, David. And this is Max, still stuck in Connecticut.
Thanks for listening.